What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Welcome to Golden State Hoop. It is the holiday season here. If you're watching on video, you can see our fantastic decorations thanks to StreamYard here. We're going to talk about the Warriors, of course, and there's a lot to talk about because there was an email that was answered today that seems to be creating a lot of news coming out of it. But there's also some Valkyrie stuff going on, which will be fun to talk about. We haven't had a lot of Valkyrie stuff to talk about, but we have Veronica Burton playing for Team USA. And then we have Kayla Thornton talk to Marissa and Jemmy about the possibility of coming back. She really wants to come back, so we'll talk about that. And we'll also talk about the latest in the CBA. There's a nice story from Ben Pickman, which I guess is nice for him, but it's not nice for the prospects of resolving this thing anytime in the near future. And are we going to this college basketball thing this weekend? What's going on with that?
Yeah, we're going. I'm sorry. I got to get tickets.
Wait. Okay. So name the teams again. Stanford.
Oh, goodness. I think it's Stanford, Berkeley, UCLA, and one more, right?
USC, right?
Yeah. USC.
Wait, is it UCLA or USC? What is the whole thing called?
The Bay Area Invisalign. Last year it was called the Bay Area Invisalign Women's Classic. That's what I'm looking up. But I think it's Stanford, Berkeley, USC. And who's the other team?
I don't know. Last year was Ohio State.
Oregon.
Is it Oregon? Oregon. Yeah. Yes, Oregon. So that is actually happening on Sunday at 3:00, I guess, is tip off for the first game, which is Stanford, Oregon, and then 5:30 tip for Cal USC. So two games for the price of one if you want to head out to Chase Center. So we'll see. Well, I'm not saying that we're going to be there until Brian decides that he really wants to be out there. All right. So let's actually kick it off. We'll start talking some Warriors here before we move on to the Valkyries. So this email that supposedly Joe Lacob sent to a fan. Now, I have a lot of questions about this email. A, how did the fan find his actual email address? This is his company email address, I'm assuming.
Or like the venture capital email they were able to get their hands. I thought it was interesting. Warriors World tweeted out that, you know, fans have done this a lot throughout the years and he responds a lot. And there's been a lot of funny screenshots. So, you know, I think that this is not like the first time this has happened. Like, it seems like this is like a reoccurring occasion, which I feel like kind of takes the maybe more of like the intensity that surrounds this for a lot of people thinking like this is just on a whim, just like the only time he's ever done this before, because I feel like that would be something that we maybe stress more if this is the first time he's ever done it. But it sounds like he does it quite a bit.
But I guess, does he reply to the ones where the fans are frustrated? And like, because like this one was very specific. Like, there were like, you know, lines about coaches and Jimmy Butler and stuff. And I'm just like, what really got into him to want to answer this fan?
I mean, I think it's kind of what we're thinking. Maybe some frustration with Steve Kerr for the Jonathan Kuminga DNP CDs. Right.
Okay. But let's say that is the case. Let's say that this is all about Kuminga. Joe Lacob saw the box scores for the previous Kuminga games before the DNPs. This brother was not lighting the world on fire.
I think it's yes, but I mean, here's a stat I'm about to throw at you. I looked up the lineups.
Okay.
This is their most played lineup in terms of minutes. I filtered by totals, not from a per game perspective. The lineup of Stephen Curry, Jimmy Butler, Draymond Green, Jonathan Kuminga, and Brandon Pajemski. It was a lineup they started with, I think, at the beginning of the season. They have played 65 minutes together, most of any lineup on the Warriors, and they are a plus 25. And then now the lineup that Steve Kerr has just announced that will be the starting lineup going forward of Stephen Curry, Jimmy Butler, Draymond Green, Moses Moody, and Quentin Post. Mm-hmm. They've played a total of, I believe that's 15 minutes together. That doesn't really sound right, but a minus 7.
Okay, but that plus 25 was probably like a plus more than that before and heavily weighted on when Kuminga was playing really well. I wonder what it's been of late.
Don't you feel that isn't there some type of parallel between, you know, Kuminga's playing well, Steph's available, Steph goes down, Kuminga starts not playing that well. Like, I almost feel like there's a handcuff with Steph that, like, okay, Steph's back now. Let's play the guy. Like, let's try it again. And there has just been no, he got the DMPs in the Chicago game. The Cleveland game looked terrible for him. Like, that was a really rough watch from his perspective. But so he got the DMP in the Chicago game, and then Steph's back against Minnesota and DMP. And then Steph's back against Portland DMP.
Two kind of makes you, it makes you think if, like, he did something or said something, or Aaron Turner keeps talking too much, or like there's no rhyme or reason from what I can tell, other than Kerr, you know, Kerr has his general statements about JK's game. You know, he's just got to do X, Y, and Z. But okay, so let's say that Lacob had this, like, he had this idea that, oh, you know, if this gets out, then, you know, maybe it's for the better. I don't, I really don't know. Like, he seems way too smart to send something like that. But let's say that Steve sees that and gets some sort of message. Does that mean that Steve's going to play JK 30 minutes on Thursday? And by the way, we're doing this on Tuesday because the Warriors play Thursday and I'm out tomorrow. So a rare Tuesday show. So we're a couple days ahead of our normal schedule, but like, is this like a warning sign? Like, you better play him. I sent the email. This is a public thing now. I'm not sure what the outcome is or what the solution is here.
I don't really think that Steve would play Jonathan Kuminga to per se, like, to save his job. I don't think that he would do that. I don't think that is the case here either. I think maybe if he plays Jonathan Kuminga, it's just to, I don't know, him and the owner are to keep a good relationship. But like, I don't think he really, like, I think it would be silly to fire Steve Kerr. I don't think Steve would.
Well, Steve Kerr's only got, this is his last year of his deal. So you don't even have to fire him. It just expires.
Yeah, but this feels like the last year of potential championship contention, which already feels way out of the picture right now. But it feels like there's some type of, you could maybe still, like, send that Kuminga trade and hopefully you get something. Like, that's kind of what this season's kind of relying on, which already tells you it's kind of a messed up season. It's not really going to happen, but that's why it's like, this is like the last shot.
John Hollinger had a column today about the top two trade, not trade targets, but like, it's trade season. Like, here's some stuff here. And the first one is obviously Giannis. And the second person he had on his list was Kuminga. And he still has this, he still had it in print, which I'm actually surprised that he wrote it, because it seems like a Kuminga to Milwaukee is just, outlandish these days. Like, so many other teams have better offers. So maybe he thinks that this is really Giannis wanting to go to Golden State. But he was basically saying that, you know, it'd have to be Kuminga and multiple firsts. But then to make the salaries work, you would have to add Draymond. And basically your team would be Steph, Jimmy, and Giannis. And you may have to also let go of Moody and Hield or whatever. But just the idea that we're still having this conversation is kind of surprising to me, because what I feel is that had JK started the season like he did, and then we were immediately able to trade him, like maybe his trade value was at its highest peak since his early days. But since then, like, his trade value has to be kind of low right now. And I don't see what team, other than we've heard the Kings and maybe Chicago as possibilities, but like, who do the Kings have on their team that you would be really interested in trading for, who is available? I can't think of anybody.
Just Keon Ellis is like the only kind of interesting, but like, you don't do that straight up for Kuminga. The salaries would have to, I don't even know what Keon makes. Keon probably makes like six, you know? So I don't know how you end up getting to that number. Malik Monk, I guess. But no, I think if it's not clear as day by now, like, Kuminga is going to get traded. And I think it's a 85% chance it happens by this deadline. And if it isn't by this deadline, I think, you know, the front office is a failure. Because then it's going to happen at the offseason, and we just wasted a season. Because it feels clear that the coach isn't going to play him. And why the coach isn't going to play him, like, I trust Steve Kerr, but I think that, I don't know. I it's almost just like Steve is like, this kid doesn't listen to me, therefore I'm just like not going to play him, even if it at the expense of the team, which... I'm kind of puzzling. Like, I'm not entirely sure how to wrap my head around this one either, but he just seems like, I think you had texted me, like a hired gun, like a 6'7" hired gun off the bench, young and athletic. What did you need against Minnesota and Portland? Young athleticism. And it's like Will Richard and Jonathan Kuminga DMP. I don't know why they don't just, like, I'm not even asking for 25 minutes. I'm just saying 6 minutes. That's what Pat Spencer got, like, something, one stint.
So I'm with you, but here's what I wonder. I wonder if it's even beneficial to play Kuminga in this hired gun kind of role. And if Steve feels like Kuminga's heart would be in it, knowing that he's a bench piece and he's specifically for the right matchups, you're running him out there. Cause this is what they did when he was a rookie. And so to Kuminga, it might be like, oh man, I'm going backwards. Is that better for the Warriors to have a Kuminga play in this role who might not be that inspired? Or is it better for the DNPs? And I don't know, because we're not in that locker room. We don't see the chemistry. We don't see the body language. We don't know the communication between Kuminga and the coaches. So there could be something there that we just don't know. What we do know is that in spurts, Kuminga has played really well and he's played really poorly. There hasn't really been a middle ground there where you're watching Kuminga and going like, okay, he's having an average game. It's either he's played well or he's been disappointing. And I'm not sure, like, what is Kerr looking for? Obviously some consistency, but maybe it is the Steph Curry thing. Like you said, maybe if you line JK up with Steph, that's when he's going to play the best, instead of what they thought, which is, well, we need him with Jimmy out there. You know, he's crashing weak side, cutting weak side, doing whatever. You know, Jimmy's got the ball. Jimmy's a great passer. All we saw the last time Kuminga played, all I saw was this dude just sitting in the corner and shooting threes. And I'm just like, well, what good is he there? Like, the team's like, sure, let's play 4-on-5. Even if Kuminga makes a few of those, you're like, okay, just keep shooting them. Because the thing that we're worried about is you crushing us coming down the lane or cutting or getting to the hoop and going to the free throw line. You shooting threes is like playing in our hands. So, like, it's really interesting to see going forward with all of this drama, and maybe most of it is just fan drama. Maybe, like, there's not really real drama, But it's just going to be interesting to see how do they play this, knowing all of the things that we know, which is they need to trade him, and now his trade value seems to be as low as it's been in quite a while. Like, I'm just not sure how you play that hand and still, like, how do you get the most out of Kuminga, A, to help the team, and B, to make his trade value higher?
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, to add to that, just to my earlier point, just looked up again another. I found another lineup with Kuminga, and it's the next most played one for Kuminga on the Warriors. 44 minutes, Steph, Jimmy, Dre, JK, Post, plus 14. Just like, I don't know. I just don't see the rationale for. I feel like you can be of the camp to simultaneously believe that this guy needs to be off the team as soon as possible, while also believing that he should be getting minutes in this rotation right now. There's a camp for that, and I just feel as though, you know, earlier this season, playing really well, doing all the little things, able to help this team win games. You know, a couple bad games, and then Steph goes down, and then he gets pulled from the starting lineup in those San Antonio games, and then he goes down or something. Like, he gets hurt, something happens. I think he got hurt, and then it's just been, you know, staggering with him and Steph not being available. And I feel like he's almost got to be attached to Steph to have impact. And Steph's back. Let's play him.
If I can give JK some of the benefit of the doubt here, the Warriors have been very rickety this season. How many games has Steph missed? Like 9? Jimmy has missed a few. Draymond has missed a few. We're saying that, you know, JK plays very well in this kind of lineup, that lineup hasn't even really been all that available for him to even play in. So if you want to give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, some of the lack of consistency are these vets who have been unable to play. But then again, the flip side of that is, well, JK, we just paid you all this money so that you can help us when these guys are not there. And there were games in which he absolutely did not. And it's almost like is he being penalized for that? Who knows? But there's lots of things that you can kind of put your finger on. And I think the thing that's most important to this team is really the guys who are making all the money. Draymond, Jimmy, and Steph need to be healthy and need to all be on the court for these guys to win. Because if we go back to the last game, the last two games, really, I thought the Minnesota game, while it was disappointing to lose that game because there's no Anthony Edwards on the other side, that is a structure of a team that just gives them problems because of just the players. Like, you know, I'm sure Steph hates going up against what is the wing defender's name?
McDaniels.
Yeah, he probably hates going up against that dude. And then you have Naz Reid, who's the Warriors' killer.
I think Rudy
Gobert, they couldn't keep him off the boards, like, and they can't go to the middle.
Probably the best Rudy game against the Warriors in his entire career. And Draymond wasn't playing, and that kind of makes sense. But like, if Draymond plays, they probably win. But like, you don't say that too confidently, and then you say, "Oh well, Anthony Edwards didn't even play," so that whole thing doesn't even matter. They lose if Anthony Edwards plays, probably.
But the game that just despicable loss was the last one.
I feel like both are.
Well, at least Minnesota has the kind of talent where you're like, okay, like, that's a team, theoretically, I'm fine losing to that team. Not the last game. The last game was so bad.
Yeah, that also might be the best game Jeremy Grant's had against the Warriors in his entire career.
Well, it's the thing, which was what we're going to talk about in a second. Portland is so athletic. Mm-hmm. They get to the hole, and then because the Warriors are not athletic, they're just playing the recover game the whole time, and what that does is leaves wide open three-pointers. It's the draw and kick game.
And it's yes, sorry, keep going.
Well, and then, so how do you counter that? Well, maybe you want to counter it with some athleticism. And
how about athleticism and size? And guess who has both of those?
JK and no Will Richard for two games. Is it trying to get D'Anthony Melton into the mix? Is it the Pat Spencer minutes? Like, I'm not sure what it was, but I know that unless Will Richard is hurt, and maybe there is something where he's not feeling well, but he could have helped in that Portland game for sure. Like, that is, he matches up with those guys better than maybe anybody of the vets that were on the bench. And so that's the one that, like, you know, I was like, I told you and your brother, I'm like, okay, I get the Kuminga thing. I do not get the Will Richard thing, especially in this Portland game, because he should be ready made to match up against some of these guys.
Especially with what he's shown us thus far. Like, you know, he's gotten the opportunity as a second round pick and he's outperformed the expectation already. Like, I think he's already starting to get like the loony type of like treatment on the Warriors, where it's like, we love you, but you're getting yanked whenever you're just going to keep getting yanked at random points. But I wanted to say that D'Anthony Melton coming back has kind of been like awesome, like very good. He looks pretty good. Like, he's reliable. He's not making the three yet. Not making the three, but I don't think I like D'Anthony Melton as a small forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
They closed the game with Steph, Pods, Melton, Jimmy Dre. And Melton's assignment was Denny Avdija. Like, what the hell are we doing? That was just easy. Like, it's just, they need athleticism and size. Like, you know, you think in your head, well, the Warriors, you know, their bread and butter is small ball five. Well, it's small ball, but when Clay's 6'7", and when Andre Iguodala's 6'7" or 6'8", when Draymond's, you know, around that height, and you know, it was always like small ball, but with size minus Steph. Like, Steph was the smaller, like the true like point guard height. Everyone else was a small forward, power forward height. Mm-hmm. This iteration of the Warriors small ball is three guards and Jimmy Dre. Yeah. Like, that's just, it's not going to work.
Bring back Harry B.
I'll take him.
Harry B's old now. You don't even think about Harry B being an old guy, and he's kind of an old guy.
The Kyrie draft?
I forget. Okay, so I guess the question is, if you had Steve Kerr's ear, or maybe you could send an email that would get aggregated and Anthony Slater would ask Steve Kerr about it, what would be one move? Would it be just pair Kuminga up with Steph and see what happens?
Yeah, I would say, dear Steve Kerr, we have the exact same team as last year, plus Melton and Horford. Why do we look significantly worse than last year? You said the defense was an issue. To me, the defense looks like a big issue, even though the defensive rating might look high. Like, at the end of games, it looks like you can't stop a fly. And I would say, yeah, I would say match up Kuminga with Steph, and, you know, just this is a roster that you should be winning. Maybe it's not as good as I thought, of course. It's obviously not, but you should probably still be winning more games than you have. So he said he blamed himself after the Portland stuff. And I feel like there is some lineup combinations that have still been not explored that, you know, that need to be explored. And,
you know, when you lose a game, like,
they just can't trade him until the 15th of January. So you have to figure it out until the 15th of January,
which is a month away.
It's a month away.
Which feels like forever, right? It feels like forever with this rotation.
Was it like 16 games?
So, yeah, like it's you kind of wonder how much I know Dre hadn't been playing much, and that's going to be a team that frustrates Draymond just because they're so fast. And just because they're so fast and so long, they're going to run into the right into the right area almost on accident sometimes. But there were moments where Draymond would throw a pass to nobody. He even yelled at Quentin Post one time. And then they're racing back. They're running back, and Draymond's chilling. Like, he's not running back on defense. And, like, it happened. If it happens once and you're like, yeah, he's just frustrated, like, you get it. Happens twice, you're like, okay. But to happen, like, I think it happened like three times in the game where he did something or he got frustrated and they just had a layup on the other end. And when in a game when you only lose by 5 points or 4 points or whatever it was, okay, I could see that. Hey, how about we clean some of that stuff up? And maybe that's what they're thinking. You know, Draymond has called, and I'm not saying Draymond is looking like he's blameless. He's saying like, no, it's not Steve's fault. It's us. Like, we just haven't. The reason why he's using so many lineups is because we haven't figured it out on our end, and so he's had to try and make some changes. I guess the thing that I would wonder is, how, like, if you were to tell Kerr and the coaches, like, rank your guys 1 through 12, like, how would he rank somebody like Pods? Like, in his heart of hearts, does he, you know, talent wise, Pods is probably in the top 6, but does he always play up to that? No, he can be fairly inconsistent as well. The problem is that what he kills them with is his indecisiveness is what he really kills them with. Where does Moses Moody fit? And it goes back to what we talked about last week and what you're talking about with JK here. Moses Moody is a ball player when Steph is on the court. And when Steph is not on the court, he does not look like a ball player. He doesn't look like a guy who should be in your top rotation. But now you have a guy like Melton. Where does Melton fit on that list? It seems like you have like a top 3 and then you have 9 guys bunched together. That's almost how he plays the rotation. And even our guy, Gee, who on a good team probably shouldn't get much run, but in a game in which Jonathan Kuminga and Will Richard get DMPs, Gee's playing like 5 minutes or 6 minutes or whatever, and maybe it's because of the hustle. Maybe it's because he and Pat Spencer are kind of like those energy guys. But that's the part of the rotation where it just seems like there's so much inconsistency. And I would like to, if I had Steve's ear, I would just be like, okay, like, who do you actually believe in? Because I want to see what you believe is your best team. Matchups be damned. Who are your 5 guys that you're running out there that you believe in, that you want to go win a basketball game with? And let's see who those guys are, because otherwise it's just like, you know, when you see that Gee Santos and Pat Spencer lineup, in a sense, you're like, oh, good for those guys. But on the other end, I'm like, oh my gosh, how are we starting 2 guys who would be like 10th and 11th guys on almost every other basketball team?
Yeah. Pat Spencer is a starter against Minnesota and then gets completely like 6 minutes against Portland. Gee Santos, team high +3.
Yeah.
On Portland game, tied with Quentin Post. It's just a weird... I don't know, man. I don't know.
All right, Let's move over to the WNBA and talk some Valkyries. I haven't had a chance to talk true Valkyries in a little while. So let's switch over to Pod Hala.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays, decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa, got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments, Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels, Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Not that there's really a ton of information out there. We don't have a ton of footage of these Team USA practices. But it is kind of fun to see Veronica Burton in the mix with all of these players, Natalie Nicasse in the mix with these coaches. And Veronica Burton had a comment sort of about the iron sharpening iron as far as her being out there. And, you know, this is an awesome moment for her, but it's also like one of those things where, you know, I think she's playing unrivaled and it's going to be cool to see her play unrivaled. But this is kind of like a major step up moment for her where it's like, oh, this is how people actually see you to play with this echelon of talent. And she's in the mix with first timers like Caitlin and Paige and Angel Reese and players like that. And she's in that mix. She's a little bit older than them, obviously. But to be on that team, I think it's got to be pretty special for her. And I wonder how, if she feels any pressure to just be like all of a sudden, like, oh my gosh, I need to even be better next year than I was the previous year. Because her playing so well kind of caught a lot of people off guard. And sometimes when you're able to do that, there's not as much pressure. But now, if we have this next season, whenever we have it, you know, there's going to be lots of footage on how do we stop Veronica Burton. But this is an amazing moment for her, and I love seeing her being able to soak it up.
Yeah, and hopefully next year they have more help for her. So, you know, if people try to stop Veronica, then you have You Stay open in the corner, then you have Said Free Agent open that he can help, and Kayla's back, and I don't know. So yeah, I mean, I saw some of those Olympic 3-on-3 games, FIBA or whatever it was, and then yeah, she's you could see her in these clips at that USA camp at Duke. It looks like it. I think it was at Duke. But man, the it was cool kind of seeing from those scrimmages. It was cool seeing a lineup of Caitlin, Paige, Angel, Aaliyah Boston, and I think it was Iriafen, or if it was Citron. I think it was Citron. Like, what a five, man. That's just a pure like year one, year two five that are, you know, looked like they're going to dominate the league.
That's how they should do the All-Star game. The OGs versus like the 25 and unders or something. That would be a good way to do the All-Star game. So Kayla Thornton was also in the blogs, I guess. Marissa and Jimmy had a conversation with her, and they talked about coming back to San Francisco, and she said, yeah, that's the hope. I've been able to slow down and do what I've been wanting to do, giving back to the community, because usually I'd probably be overseas. So it's a bit of a blessing to get to stay here. I'm praying that I'll be back when training camp starts and ready to go.
It's been interesting seeing her. She's legit just like here. And like, I think there was near my apartment at Union Square, they shut off like two blocks for this Christmas kind of block event where it's all lit up and different shops and looks like a winter wonderland. And I think the Valkyries had a booth and Kayla was there. Just like, I wish I wasn't in town, but I would have totally went.
So there's a conversation, and we even had this conversation on the expansion draft. And you know, there's a subset of people who think, why would you protect Kayla? She's in her early 30s. You have a young team. Even if she makes you better, you're not winning the title with her. So you should protect some of the younger players. And one of those players who's on the bubble is Carla Late. Ben and Sabrina, when they did their draft, they had Carla as unprotected. And I think there are some people, and even people in our Discord, who believe that maybe Kayla should be the one who is unprotected. And there's a someone in our Discord and who's a listener as well, Chris. Chris had a question, and I think we've answered it correctly, but I just wanted to bring it up because it is what people are wondering. And I think we even asked Sabrina this last year, but it's like the idea of why would you protect somebody who's essentially going to be a free agent? And I think the answer is that if you protect them, you have this window of time in which you can negotiate with them. And if you don't protect them, then they're going to be on the other team and the other team has this opportunity to have conversations with them and negotiate with them. So you want to kind of keep them in house, and then you can, you know, you can rebuild. So the idea
there's
is
also, I mean, there's also the core. The other team could select in core, and then you're cooked. You're screwed.
Right. Do you think Kayla would be someone who would be cored though?
It's I think from an optics perspective, if you're a Portland or, you know, Toronto, and you're not really able to attract maybe the free agents you were hoping, like, then you could say Kayla Thornton was an all-star last year. We have no other player on our team that was an all-star in the past 3 years. Let's core her.
So what does a core mean in the new CBA? Because it's not going to mean $200,000 like it does right now. So it's all it's payroll.
Yeah, I say this every podcast. I feel like a broken record, but we still need to learn the rules.
Yep.
For those who don't remember, 100%. The Valkyries for their expansion draft had a rule that they were only able to select one unrestricted free agent. And they selected Monique Billings with that one available unrestricted free agent. What are the rules for when Toronto and Portland do their expansion draft? Because a lot of players are unrestricted free agents, a lot of them. So it would be weird if they only had one, but then I don't know what's their limit. So we just need to wait for the rules, because I think once you get the rules, you could be a little more strategic with it. Mm-hmm. If it is still only one, then maybe you do let Kayla, you do leave it, because maybe there's a chance that a better unrestricted free agent is there for the taking.
Yeah. I personally, and this is the fandom coming out a little bit, I just liked watching her play basketball.
Me too.
Would she possibly play in front of other players like Chechi, where maybe you want, or you know, maybe you want Chechi to get some of those nips? It's not like Chechi's a youngest person either. Would she stall some of Eustace's minutes? Who knows? But it is an interesting exercise because of the way that things work, and expansion is going to keep happening. So this is going to be a conversation over the next several years as well, as how do you keep all these players?
I think you can start like for sure. We know Veronica and Janelle are going to get protected. And we know that those two players are not only going to be protected, but they're going to be starters for this team mm-hmm. next year. So if Kayla is on the team, you basically write in three starters and Veronica, Kaylin and Janelle. And I feel like you'd want to kind of surround them with two very, like, offensive players to kind of make up for maybe some of the offensive deficiencies that Kayla has, that sometimes Veronica can get stopped, and then Janelle, you know, sometimes have off nights. And I know we're so far away from thinking about roster construction, but if those three are protected and are still on the team, like, I imagine those are already three starters locked.
Yeah, so they got to be locked.
Finding two more players that are way more offensive than Temi was, way more offensive than Monique was, Ileana Repair kind of, but has offense, but you know,
Repair's clearly got to be kept. I think
start doing the numbers, it just gets a little, I think so too. But if it's five, you want to do the five, it's Veronica, Janelle, you stay. That's three. We get two more,
Kayla, in your world, four. based on that, and then it's got to be Repair, right?
So then no Chechi, no Carla, and I think those would be the two obvious.
No, Kayla Jarls.
Come on.
Well, she played a lot.
She was great.
Last year.
I mean, a starter, but like, there's no world. I've never seen her name on any of these mock protections.
No, not at all. Not at all.
But you have seen some Carlas in ours. Like, when I thought it was seven, I thought that maybe Carla would get protected. Of course, no Tiffany Hayes. I don't think we expect that. No Kate Martin. So, yeah, it's. I think the obvious ones are Chechi and Carla, though, if you go with that five.
And I think Unrivaled tips off in like 3 weeks, so at least we'll have some basketball to check out.
Not only basketball, but Valkyries. We'll have like four Valkyries. Players. Like Tiffany Hayes, we, you know, talked about it on this show that we didn't see her name in the initial Unrivaled roster list, which was interesting because she was on it the previous year, and she didn't confirm in her exit interview that she was going to be playing Unrivaled. She was with a Turkish team? I think something happened where they mutually parted ways. And I don't know what that really means from, like, you know, you saw what happened with Dominique Malanga and her club. It didn't seem like the same thing with Tiffany. But yeah, now Tiffany is just playing unrivaled. I think, yeah, she replaced Satu Sabali, who is still recovering from a concussion suffered in game, what, 5?
Yeah, that's rough.
Of the WNBA finals. So, yeah, now we have Kate, Veronica, Monique, and Tiffany, if I'm missing anyone. I don't think I am, but yeah, those four. Oh, I think we have Ami here in the... She's in the reserve player pool.
Yeah, like, the possible replacements or whatever. Yeah. All right, let's finish off this show talking about the CBA. Ben Pickman posted an article earlier this week. January 9th is still the expiration, but as we've seen, it could get pushed out again. But the further you push out, the closer the worries are to not starting the season on time. There's a few things that were laid out here that we should probably talk about, and one of them is the revenue gap. Now, we've been talking about how the NBA has a 50% to the players and 50% to the owners on all basketball-related income, and the WNBA Players Association was talking about that kind of deal for themselves, and the WNBA owners were saying, well, we have this like pool of money, which I think they call the shareable revenue. And it is a pool of the revenue that they said, out of this pool, you guys get 50% of this pool, but it is a smaller amount of the revenue. And now the players have basically said that they want 30% of total league and team revenue. So this is different than what the NBA has. And it's what I said earlier, how they don't need 50 now. They just need a plan to eventually get to 50 if this league is successful. And I think 30 is actually a good place for them. Maybe the owners are like, no, how about 25? And maybe they kind of meet there. But not being at 50, I do not think is a loss for the players. I think going from whatever they get now to 25 or 30, I think that's actually a win for them. And then 5 years down the line, when we do this again, maybe you bump up to 35, then you bump up to 40, and eventually your end goal is to get to 50, and this league's going to be successful if you do. So that is their counter. Would go up 1 year annually. So you'd start at 30, you get to 34 by the end of this thing. And so there's still that difference, because the league is like, nope, we like this shareable revenue metric thing. And the players are like, nope, we want this total revenue thing. So there's just such a large delta still about this. What do you think about the demands as we know it for what the players want versus what the owners want?
I'm always going to side with the players. I think we had talked about it before, and I didn't think that they would hold strong for 50% after receiving 9% for these past however long it was. Like, I knew that they were going to be able to settle for lower than 50. I think they'll probably go below 32. Like, I think we're talking about 20 to 25 would be my guess once it's all said and done. But there was some other interesting stuff, like the players want them to hold a minimum of 12 players and 11, because you can only have 12 players, but you could hold a minimum of 11. The players union or association wants it to be a minimum of 12. There's like that start date that for some reason the WNBA wants to start in like March or something, or not. Was it they wanted to start early and interfere with the college season, which just does not make sense at all.
Well, so there's the player compensation piece, which is the salaries. So the way that the league is proposing the shareable revenue, the average salaries would be in the 500 range, and the max salary would be in the 1.2.
Yeah.
The Players Association haven't set a hard ceiling for the maximum, but expects the top players to get, to get a million. The union wants, like you said, to mandate 12 player roster, so that's the player association, and add 2 developmental spots per team to accommodate the growth of the league. So kind of like how
basically a two-way.
The NBA has 15 roster spots. They would want 12 plus 2 to have as developmental role. And then the Players Association also doesn't want this core designation. Now, I wonder if this is negotiable, though, because if you can make the... So the NFL has something very similar to this, but it's almost never used. And so by the players do have some juice here and the agents in the NFL, so they kind of negotiate around it. But maybe the players give this one up and go, okay, we're okay with the core, but maybe you change the terms of the core. Maybe you can only do it once.
Yeah,
you
know? I think that's likely.
And if you do that, then you give us shorter contracts. You can core us once, but you give us shorter contracts. So it's a 3-year deal. You can core us once. So then after the fourth year, we become free agents.
By shorter contract, you mean shorter rookie contracts.
Shorter rookie contracts. So for the schedule and the structure, the Players Association wants to increase the schedule to 48 games and 50 once they get to 18 teams. And the league has said they want the opportunity to go to have even more games. And then what you were talking about, which is opening training camps as early as mid-March, which means your draft class would not be at training camp yet. So basically you have your team, your vets, and then the rookies would come late. And then as far as the draft is concerned, they want that draft combine, which we've talked about. Some of the other things that they're negotiating: parental leave. The league offered 1 week of paid leave for non-birthing parents. The union is asking for 4 weeks of paid leave. The Players Association wants $500 a month reimbursable for out-of-network mental health services, which the league has rejected in favor of, you know, whatever their own providers and solutions are. So out-of-network meaning outside of their healthcare plan. And then retirement, health screening programs and one-time payments for retired players with at least 4 years service is a proposal. There's a security issue, and some of this has got to be Caitlin Clark related. Like when, you know, she was, you know, there was so much surrounding her in her rookie year and some of the other players just, I guess the Players Association is demanding 2 full-time security employees per team, along with mandated staffing for physical therapists and trainers. And then there's this wearable tech thing that the players like, sure, we'll wear your wearable tech. And then there's a housing thing as well. So lots of things that seem, based on the way that Kelsey Plum, who's the VP of the Players Association, sounds like she's just really down on those talks. So it sounds like they're pretty far apart. But when I read all of that stuff out, it doesn't seem like it has to be so far apart. It seems like there's things that are give and take on both sides that should be easier to figure out. But maybe they're just still interested in playing hardball for another 3 weeks.
Yeah. I don't have much to add to that. I think that, you know, but just see how it plays out. I think that, yeah.
So the last show that we said, I specifically said that, you know, the Players Association has one trick up their sleeve, which is get Caitlin Clark out in the media, have her talk about, you know, what she believes they're willing to sacrifice in order for the league and the players. And she kind of did that, though it was even too... maybe too political for my tastes from her. Now, she's a very young person. She's not this wizened veteran, right? She's a very young person. She wants to play hoop. This is how she makes her money. This is how she's marketable. So I understand all of that. But I wanted to read her quotes before we get out of here. She said, "This is the biggest moment the NBA has ever seen, and it's not something that can be messed up, and we're going to fight for everything we deserve." I like that. "At the same time," here we go. "We need to play basketball. That's your leverage, sis. You can't do that one. Like you cannot say that you're dying to get back on the court. That's what the owners believe. "At the same time, we need to play basketball. That's what our fans crave, and that's what all of you crave as well." I think she's talking to the journalists. I'm not sure the journalists are necessarily craving it, but is you want the product on the floor. At the end of the day, that's how you make the money. Then she said, it's important that we find a way to play this next season. Our fans and even everybody that has played in this league that has come before us deserve that as well. Obviously, I can't speak to every number. It's pretty complicated, but I think there are different things we can find ways to say, no, we certainly deserve that, and we're not going to compromise on that, and then other things that we can probably compromise on. I liked about half of her statement, but there was that other piece where I'm like, don't give in to that desire to play. You got to be willing to lose games in order to really stand for what you believe in.
Play unrivaled if she wants to play.
Right. You can play it unrivaled. You know, you can create games, charity games with a lot of the players and, you know, kind of go and go around cities and go, hey, this is the product that, you know, we have that you're not able to see because these owners aren't coming to the negotiation table in the right fashion. So I think she understands her place. And this is the same thing that happened with Michael Jordan, which is she has the most important voice, and how she uses it is going to be it's going to be very relevant to this deal. And I just hope she's able to hold strong and know where she stands and how valuable she is to the Players Association here. So, all right. I think we are good. As far as next week being the holiday week, I'm going to guess that we probably will not have a show, but we'll see about the week before the new year. And we'll also play it by ear. This is a kind of a hard time with the holidays to do stuff. But any lasting thoughts before we get out of here and go do whatever you need to do? And I got to eat dinner and everything. So anything else you want to say before we get out of here?
I just got a notification from SoundCloud that James Wiseman dropped the new release.
James Wiseman. What's his rap name? Is his rap name just James Wiseman?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he'd have like a
Jimmy Jam,
like a fun name. Yeah, Jimmy Jam or James Dub or something.
I think no lasting thought. This is kind of more of a somber episode. Warriors suck.
I know.
Doesn't seem like we're close on negotiations for CBA, so maybe there's no WNBA. Starting the next season, at least the Niners are winning.
Just hope for the best with WNBA. Hope make that be your Christmas wish. At least the Niners are winning, and that will be the next show on this network, which is Rod and I after the Monday night game against the Colts. And, you know, Brad and I, we were talking about doing a show yesterday for Thompson and Clark, but there's not really any Giants news happening. That's still small news, you know, signing a number 5 starter or whatever. It's not
not pod worthy
to the table.
Full episode.
But, yeah, I don't want to talk about this dude's sinker ball and how he doesn't strike anybody out. But, if something breaks and the Giants do make a move, which we don't really expect, you know, we'll try and record something at some point when it happens. But anyways, all right. That is it from here. For Bri, I am Double G. See you when we see you. Peace out.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.